I think we're ready to go. So, discussion here, the title of the presentation was The Internet's Private Cops, Protecting Your Rights Against Corporate Vigilantes. And the concern, I'm Wendy Seltzer, a staff attorney with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and... Thanks very much. Thrilled to be here. So, our concern in this discussion is that you've heard a lot about, and will be hearing a lot about, the public cops, the government, the law enforcement, and the steps that you should take to keep your activities safe from them. And my concern in this presentation is to draw your attention to another set of threats to online activity, and that's the threats from the private law enforcement, the corporations and private actors who are also interested in stifling some of your online speech, in stopping some of your activities, and whose activities and enforcement pose threats to the internet itself because of the way they're trying to crack down on activity. So the early view, in the famous words of EFF co-founder John Gilmore, the internet views censorship as damage and routes around it. The thought was that hackers didn't need to worry about the law, because if the law stepped in one place, the network would move in a different direction and would just evade the law enforcement, avoid the pressures of the East Coast code with the West Coast code, simply beat them by playing a different game. The question that comes up, though, as we see more and more pressure from Washington to change the law, pressure from companies to crack down on online activity, is will the law break the internet before we manage to route around the bad law? Because even without understanding the technology, we find lawyers and regulators attempting to regulate it, and they're dangerous because they don't understand the technology, because they regulate to demand the impossible, trying to require, for example, that we put watermark detectors into every analog to digital converter to stop the threat of digital copyrighted material possibly leaking out onto the internet. And if they regulate to demand the impossible, then everybody becomes a lawbreaker and everybody becomes a potential target. So our goal is to understand the law and the technology. If the regulators won't understand the tech, then the technologists have to understand the law and how to work with it in order to change it and in order to protect yourself from the legal threats. So, case that many of you may be aware of in this private enforcement context is the RIAA versus Verizon. And funny to be saying to this crowd that we're on Verizon's side in this matter, but the Recording Industry Association of America went to court and got the clerk stamp on some subpoenas demanding the identity of some alleged file sharers on Kazaa. Verizon, standing up for its users' privacy and anonymity rights in their online activity, withheld the names and went to court with a motion to quash the subpoena, saying it had a right to keep its subscriber records private, and its subscribers, more importantly, had a right to keep their activities safe from the prying of the recording industry. The D.C. District Court ordered them to reveal the names, and although that decision is currently on appeal, the appeals court also ordered Verizon to turn over the names even before the appeal was heard. So we've now... Since then, we've seen a spate of subpoenas from the recording industry to tens of ISPs and hundreds for the identities of hundreds of additional users, and the recording industry tells us they're sending these things out at a rate of about 75 a day, demanding identities of individual users. And later on this evening, at 6 o'clock, in the Apollo room, EFF is a group of us going to have a session specifically on this RIAA versus the people, trying to discuss this onslaught on individuals and on file sharing. Sure, you have a question right now? Yes, very much. The ISPs have taken the position that they are just neutral intermediaries and not responsible for what their users are posting. And then they have a safe harbor written into the law as part of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act that says that they're not responsible for the content their users are posting or transmitting via the network. But another part of that safe harbor contains this subpoena provision, and one of the challenges right now is whether it's even constitutional to allow the recording industry to subpoena information from ISPs without any pending lawsuits. But here, the recording industry was saying, we're not trying to hold Verizon liable, but we need to go through Verizon and the other ISPs to get to the end user's information. So part of the story behind this case is that the peer-to-peer services were initially thought to be unstoppable. Napster went down, but then people thought, well, that was because they had a centralized server. Napster itself was the target, and once Kazaa and Grokster and other networks came up with decentralized services, then it would be harder to go after them, and this file sharing, this network activity would always be free. And EFF recently won in the Central District of California on behalf of Grokster, arguing that the newer peer-to-peer file sharing services software manufacturers should not be liable for the content that their users were posting. That because the peer-to-peer software was decentralized and available for use in all sorts of ways, that Grokster and the peer-to-peer software manufacturers shouldn't be liable for their users' activities. But that doesn't solve the problem, because the recording industry says, fine, we can't go after the software companies. We'll find other targets. We'll find the ISPs, and we'll find through them the end users. So law enforcement is not just the government, but law enforcement is also the private companies who are able to use the mechanisms of government, namely the courts, to enforce the laws that they say protect them. And the government is then called in as a backup when the corporations go to court demanding enforcement of their legal rights. And the internet architectures facilitate this control. Even amid the decentralization, there are still choke points. There are still internet service providers and backbone providers and domain name service and places in the network that can be targeted. Even if you are speaking, even if you're participating in what looks like a private forum, all of the connections are through private networks. The servers are private. And there are lots of different places in this network that can be targeted. So we see that while the internet enables more people to publish, it also enables more people and corporations to monitor that speech. The bots and enforcement mechanisms that the recording industry uses to search out songs Now, these are on the public network. This is using the peer-to-peer networks, the recording industry argues, as they were designed to be used. Similarly, corporate copyright holders and trademark holders send out search bots that are accessing public websites in the same manner that a visitor is accessing those websites, and in the same manner that a browser whom you would invite in would be accessing them, but they're specifically on the lookout for their copyrighted material, their trademarks, and when they see those, they come back with legal claims. They claim that because your work is inspired by something that they have a copyright in, that it's a copyright infringement. Or if you've developed the technology that interoperates with a proprietary protocol, they may claim that you're circumventing technological protection measures and falling foul of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act's anti-circumvention provisions. We were hearing earlier about ways, creative ways to record streaming media. We've seen lawsuits where media players that can mimic the so-called secret handshake of a real audio player been sued for circumventing technological measures protecting, claimed to protect the copyrighted material that's being streamed. And because of the way the safe harbor works in the DMCA, when an ISP gets a takedown request, its strong incentive is to take down the material that's claimed to be infringing a copyright, even if there's no copyright infringement. And although you as a user, if you've posted something, have a right to file a counter notification, we often see that the process ends with a takedown notice to an ISP, the material goes down, and there's never a judicial determination whether there's been a violation of copyright or not. We also see claims of trademark infringement because you may be commenting on or criticizing a company's product, parodying their logo. They may claim that that infringes their trademarks. We see claims of trade secret misappropriation frequently from companies claiming that employees have stolen their material and posted it on bulletin boards, or disgruntled employees are misappropriating trade secrets or trying to give out inside information. We see all sorts of legal claims, and the tools that lawyers use in these cases are a fairly basic set. They start out with the cease and desist letter, a nasty nastygram on fancy letterhead claiming that you've done something that violates the law. If you don't respond within some very short period of time, 10 days, then we will pursue all available legal remedies. And they'll often spell out in great detail all of the injunctions and statutory damages that they'll seek. Often these things overstate the law, but it's often a cheap way to get material taken down from the net. Subpoena is a step up from the cease and desist letter. That the lawyer, as officer of the court, still doesn't have to get a judge's signature on the subpoena, but does have to bring a few forms to the court clerk, get those things stamped and issued from the court, and those are a formal demand from the court to turn over information. Going further, they can file a lawsuit, file a complaint, and things get a bit more expensive for both sides at that point. But a lawsuit gives further range of private investigation through various discovery mechanisms. And finally, private corporations can work in cooperation with federal and state prosecutors if they see something that appears to be a criminal violation, they can suggest to the district attorney or federal agent that this looks like a case ripe for prosecution. So how can we respond? Well, the Chilling Effects Project, which is a joint effort of Electronic Frontier Foundation and several law school clinics around the country, Harvard, Stanford, Berkeley, is working to combat the chill that comes from these legal threats that overstate the case, trying to help people to understand their legal rights and so that they're not deterred merely by the language in some of these cease and desist letters. And so chillingeffects.org invites people to submit their cease and desist letters to the Chilling Effects Project and have them analyzed. The law students at our various clinics we work with will analyze the cease and desist letters and pull out key phrases from the letters and link those to explanations of the law. So somebody who's made a claim of copyright will get a link to explaining what copyright protects, and then again to the defenses to a claim of copyright infringement, the fair use exceptions, and the kinds of activity that might constitute fair use rather than copyright infringement, to help the recipients understand that although some lawyer is claiming that there's a copyright infringement going on, that's not necessarily the case. So we have the story of DaveZilla.com. Who's going to come sue over this? Well, the owners of Godzilla, Japanese company Toho. Unfortunately, they're not so good with the internet, and this is the page that you get to when you search for Godzilla. But nonetheless, they thought that this DaveZilla page was a threat to their online brand and sent a cease and desist letter claiming that that little dragon was an infringement of their trademark, demanding that you remove the objectionable imagery and reference to Godzilla from your website. To eliminate any likelihood of confusion. Now, likelihood of confusion is the key test for trademark infringement. And if you look at that little dragon, there's not a whole lot of likelihood of confusion with Godzilla, but that's the claim. So what can you do? You get one of these. Well, one thing, submit the letter to Chilling Effects, and then think about how you know how to use the internet far better than some of the companies who are sending these threats. So in response to this claim that DaveZilla confuses consumers and the public, we see a quiz that asks, is it Godzilla? Can you figure out whether these things are Godzilla? And all sorts of free DaveZilla, everybody became the Quizilla and the Zilla Liberation Front. And we didn't hear very much more from Toho, their nasty gram notwithstanding. DaveZilla is still there, and the dragon logo remains. What else do we see? We see Sony claiming about their Aibo, that somebody who called himself Aibo Pet and developed electronic dances for the Aibo was circumventing the copyright protection mechanisms that Sony had put in place on this $2,000 robot's memory stick. And he got a cease and desist letter demanding that he remove the programs, stop teaching his dog new tricks. Claimed unauthorized distribution of copyrighted software, circumventing the copy protection. And so he submitted to Chilling Effects. This is our submission form. Get a little explanation of what circumvention is, and how, unfortunately, the anti-circumvention law is a pretty steep barrier to reverse engineering, and although it's supposed to have an exception for reverse engineering for interoperability, that hasn't worked out so well in practice. It hasn't given people protection from these kinds of threats, and the threats of lawsuit can be rather frightening. But here, too, an internet protest, a show of support for this kind of creative programming was enough to get Sony to turn around and realize that, you know, in order to use these programs at all, somebody's got to buy a $2,000 piece of hardware from Sony. It's hard to see how this circumvention is really harming Sony's market. And swayed by that, Sony allowed IBOPET to put up slightly modified software that made them a little bit more comfortable that it wasn't threatening their intellectual property, but still let people do creative things with their hardware. So we've got the legit iMUT program that's now online and now available. Meanwhile, Ibo is going to law school. To learn to read the end user license agreements. And there are now all sorts of other all sorts of people who might think to sue over these pages, but have wisely decided, so far at least, that it's not harming them, and they'll let it go. Meanwhile, the American Kennel Club inexplicably decided that the Ibo Kennel Club was infringing their mark, and moreover, it ensures a known lineage for your Ibo, but the robots do not produce offspring, so there is no lineage to record. Corporations with no sense of humor don't get very far on the web. And Ibo Kennel Club still seems to be around as well. Finally, one last example from the Chilling Effect site. Another step we've been able to take is in conjunction with Google, which as a search engine gets a lot of DMCA takedown requests. These are claims that by linking to pages that infringe copyright through its search engine, Google is contributing to the copyright infringement. And because the DMCA spells out an exception or a category in its safe harbor for information location tools and describes the safe harbor that they can seek if they remove the links from their search engine, leaving open the possibility that they could at least be sued for a contributory infringement if they refused to take those links out. Google thought it was safer when demanded to remove the links from its search engine. So our friend, the Scientologists, were among the first to use DMCA takedown notices this way. They found Operation Clam Bake, a site that they've never particularly liked, that's critical of Scientology, that reposts pieces of the Scientology doctrines in the context of criticizing Scientology and explaining problems they see. So Scientology sent Google a series of DMCA takedown notices demanding that Google remove links from its search engine results. Well, rather than remove them silently, leave people wondering what's happened to the criticism, has Scientology triumphed over all its critics? Google decided it wanted to take advantage of the safe harbor. It wanted to get this protection from possible liability by removing the links, but it didn't want them to disappear completely, so it added this link at the bottom of a search page that links over to Chilling Effects and both explains the DMCA policy and gives a link to the DMCA complaint. And if you click on that link, At the bottom of the search results, you head over to chilling effects, where you see the demand that Google remove search results. You see why it is that Google's results can't be complete. And on the attached chart, you see the listing of those search results that Google was asked to remove. But with a few extra steps, you can still find them. And so we hope that this gives people a way to understand what's happening with the DMCA and a way to express frustration. If you think that Google's results are less useful because they're forced to remove results on a mere claim that the material is infringing, the complaint shouldn't be with Google. The complaint should be with Congress, with your lawmakers who have seen fit to enact this provision into law that makes Google think that their only reasonable response is to remove links from their search index. So, resisting the chill. Legal threats, as we've seen, are often used against obnoxious but not illegal activities. Corporations think, often rightly, that paying their lawyers for an hour or so of sending off a nasty gram on fancy letterhead will get down 90% of what's bothering them, and if they don't go after the 10% that stay up, that's still good enough. But in order to resist the chill, it helps both to know the law, and as part of the chilling effect site, we've got background and frequently asked questions in the various subject areas, trademark, copyright, patent law, defamation, some of the legality questions around linking, and invite you, if you get a cease and desist letter or have questions about the law, come see what the general background information is and submit the letter to chilling effects. And think about this fighting back out of band. Corporations know their legal remedies, but they don't necessarily stop to think about the bad publicity that they can get for making silly legal claims. And chilling effects helps to expose that, and you who are doing things on the web and on the net can also help to expose the silliness that people are invoking in the name of the law. And finally, when the law itself is broken, we need people to become activists and work to fix the law. If copyright law is truly criminalizing the activities of millions of people, it's time for those millions of us to go to Congress and demand that we get a more sensible copyright law that allows us to do the things that we like. So, of course, EFF has resources on these issues. Chilling Effects has some resources. And I always like to close with this. Judge Kaczynski in the Ninth Circuit, in a case brought by Mattel against Aqua for the song Barbie Girl, closed by concluding that Barbie Girl was not an infringement of Mattel's trademarks, and the parties are advised to chill. And, of course, as chilling effects, we advise you not to be chilled at the same time. So I'm happy to take questions. Sure.
Does EFF have any information regarding the investigation by the Central Forum in Congress regarding RIAA's subpoenas against ISPs?
Senator Coleman has just announced that he's interested in doing some investigation into the RIAA subpoenas, and we strongly support that investigation and will be very interested to, and hopeful that he will be able to get more information out of the recording industry than the public has so far about what they're doing and what they're trying to achieve by subpoenaing 75 people a day. That's one of the real challenges in this area, that the defendants in a lawsuit don't have, in the American system, often don't have great remedies against the other side. In a copyright suit, the successful defendant can win costs and attorney's fees from the other side. Otherwise, and particularly if it's non-commercial activity, it's hard to counter-sue with some of the traditional interference with business relations or interference with contract. It's hard to get money back for the harassment that these things are causing. Another piece of our aim with this project is to get some creative thinking going about what we need to bring these laws back into balance. Let me just... Sure.
Can you tell us more about exactly what the process is for these RIA subpoenas as far as they don't require a judge's signature? What exactly do they require to actually file these RIA subpoenas?
Well, we're going to get into that in more detail later this evening, but in short, they require a good faith allegation of copyright infringement. Yeah. One of the things we'd like to see out of this Coleman investigation or others is exactly what they're doing. They may be downloading files. They may at least be looking at hashes. In the case of Usher, they clearly weren't. Unfortunately, all they're swearing under penalty of perjury is that they are acting with authorization of the copyright holder. All the rest is just stuff they're saying. Either way. If they're downloading somebody else's copyrighted file and without authorization, and I suppose they could be. It's going to be very difficult to get a judge to find against them because of the whole context in which they're engaging in this activity. They will say we need to do this to protect our rights. They would probably make a fair use claim that they weren't doing it to listen to the song or to get a market replacement for the song, but to try to enforce their rights. Did you have a question there? It's very hard to know. Obviously, the things that we don't see on chilling effects and don't see publicized are hard to count. And another a part of the genesis of the chilling effects project was our frustration at seeing websites that you'd see one day, and the next day you'd see the front page replaced by a cease and desist letter, and a few days after that you'd see nothing at all. This is at least a way to track the ones who do submit information to our site and to follow up on those stories. And in some cases, we see people who are able to resist the chill. Others, unfortunately, feel that they have to take down. At the back. Well, part of the problem is in the way that they're doing it, that when they're going after user information from the ISP, there's been no judicial determination that there's a copyright infringement going on. And so on the mere good faith allegation that there's an infringement, they can breach any privacy that the user might have thought he had in online activities. Unfortunately, a lot of the activity underneath may be copyright infringement, but there are people using the networks for other purposes, and they shouldn't be subject to having their identities revealed on the mere claim that something unlawful is going on. It's an issue of low-hanging fruit right now. The ones that are easiest for them to look at and easiest for them to get into will be the ones that they go after first. They seem to be trying a scare tactic where they go make enough noise and bluster to scare people away from using the networks. But I get the bigger picture that I'm trying to give, though, is that it's not enough for us to think, well, the smart ones among us can just go to the better hidden peer-to-peer networks. We should also really be working to change the law so that if there's a better way of addressing the problems of getting artists paid for the music and getting the music that we want to listen to, let's think about how to reform the law to answer those questions. Yeah, we've just started up a big Let the Music Play campaign, trying to help people to understand the impact of the law, trying to, we work with organizations like the Creative Commons that are thinking about creative alternative licensing mechanisms and that show people sort of the kinds of creativity that can flourish when copyright isn't used to lock works up. And basically, yes, trying to show people the range of options that could work better than the system that's locking things up for 95 years.
Are these subpoenas that the IAEA issued, are they public?
Through the court's PACER system, they have all been made public to anybody who registers for a password. And so far, EFF has been taking... And as court records, they're all public also to anyone who walks into the D.C. District Court. So we've been trying to keep up database lookup to help people see whether they've been fingered yet. Right now, they're all being filed in the D.C. District Court, District of Columbia. And a few people so far have challenged that as a court that doesn't have jurisdiction over Boston College or MIT in Boston, and at SBC out in California has challenged that as well. A lot of those start out as subpoenas to ISPs for user information because a lot of the claims are for postings on bulletin boards. A lot of people put information up there thinking that they've got a pseudonym that nobody will trace. And so the employer then subpoenas the ISP or the host for the user information. And we've been helping some of those users to file John Doe lawsuits to or motions to quash the subpoenas where, in fact, there's no trade secret and it really appears to be an attempt to harass an employee who's saying something that he's got a lawful right to say. Some of them do. Some of them get dropped at the motion to quash stage because the court finds there was really no lawful basis for the subpoena in the first place. And even if you found the identity, you wouldn't have a reason to go after the person. So there's no reason to give up the identity. Sure. It's an awfully good question. It shows the lack of proportion in a lot of these laws, that copyright holders successfully argued to Congress that our digital assets are so valuable that without extraordinarily harsh penalties, we won't be able to keep them safe. Congress said, sure, that sounds reasonable to us. And we got the No Electronic Theft Act, and we're hearing proposals now to lower the limit to make uploading of a single, or offering for upload of a single song, a felony. And again, that's what we need the public to speak out against and to make that very claim. It's ridiculous against this kind of market to be calling this a criminal act. I see a couple of people in the back. We're going to try and get more of this discussion going later this evening, if you can get back for that. We can't, in short, we don't know the strategy that they're going to use. A lot of it seems to be scare. I guess that's a strategic judgment that maybe the corporation or the person demanding removal should be making. They might be wise not to demand removal if they think that that's just going to make it more interesting. It's not really. All right, one last question, and then I'll be headed outside for anyone else. Well, some of the silliest we've seen have come from the company that owns Barney, who sends out claims whenever anyone puts up the Barney song with different words or puts devil's horns on the dinosaur. We see a lot from Scientology. All right, thanks very much. Thanks.